Welcome to New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. Today, we have the pleasure to chat with Bob Dahl, who is Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. Bob has over 40 years of financial services experience, and you probably have seen him as a guest on CNBC, Bloomberg TV, MoneyWise, or Fox Business News. He's an experienced portfolio manager and is an author of weekly, quarterly, and annual investment commentaries focusing on key themes and risk driving equity markets, monetary policy, and the global economy. Bob, so glad to have you and welcome to A New Lens.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be with you.
Give us a little background of yourself, where you grew up, where you went to school, and a high level of your career.
I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia in a row home. We played stickball in the backyard, as it were. And, I remember fondly those days.
Were you good?
Let's put it this way. I never hit a ball and it broke a window in Mrs. Mahaley's house, which was right across the way. Many others did break those windows.
but that just may mean you didn't hit it.
That's probably right. Or I hit it to a good place. You know?
There you go. There you go. Who knows?
Anyway, so jumping forward, I went to Lehigh University undergrad. Spent a couple of years in public accounting between undergraduate and graduate school. Got my MBA at Wharton, University of Pennsylvania, and then entered the investment management business, which is where I've been all my career. Common to the four places I've worked, portfolio manager. I've always, Jeff, managed U.S. large cap equities. That's the only thing I pretend to know anything about, and some days I wonder even if I do. But I've had other opportunities to be a manager and a leader and a strategist along the way and taking advantage of those opportunities. But the bedrock, my trade, if you will, is managing money and large cap U.S. equities.
Tell me a little bit about that. What's the passion behind that piece of what you do?
Yeah. So between undergraduate and graduate school, I was dating a girl. And as I like to say, I did not fall in love with her, but I fell in love with the stock market because her father was an investor in the stock market. I didn't even know what the stock market was. Growing up, we had no stocks as a family, et cetera, et cetera. And this is fascinating. The intersection of all kinds of things, quantitative mathematical stuff, the dismal science of economics, sentiment, accounting, psychology. Mm-hmm. And then you get see your score in the newspaper every day. That was kind of fascinating too, Jeff. And, trying to help clients, whether they have a lot or a little, to help them with whatever their financial objectives were. It all came together, and I found it very exciting.
You said you've been at four different places. What were the four places that you were at?
I cut my teeth at Citicorp Investment Management as an analyst and got a break to be a junior PM. I was there 7 years. Then I was a dozen years at the Oppenheimer Funds, where I was hired to manage money, became head of equities, and then the chief investment officer, then recruited to Merrill Lynch Investment Managers, where within a couple of years, through all kinds of crazy stories, I became CEO of that business, was for 5 years to the day when BlackRock bought the investment management business of MLIM, and I became head of equities there managing money. So I consider that one stop, but instead, in some sense, it was a stop and a half. Then at Nuveen, where I was a portfolio manager, investment strategist, and now in my fourth month, privileged to be a chief investment officer at Crossmark, which, as some would know, is a faith-based firm that manages and distributes values-based products.
At some point, I'd love to hear about Crossmark Global, and maybe you'll answer it in this next question, but how would you best describe yourself in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
Age tells me, Jeff, that I'm at least late third quarter, maybe in the fourth quarter. So that's the starting point.
Okay.
So perspective is something that I try to have that I'm sure I didn't have when it was the first half of the game. And perspective can take lots of different forms, but keeping it simple, I'm only going to be on this planet for this long compared to eternity, given my Christian beliefs, this long. And so, you know, where am I spending my time? What's occupying my thoughts? What are my motivations? Where am I going? How am I trying to help people? So that's, I think, a lot of, as I consider where my journey is today relative to, you know, 25 years ago when I was, you know, busy doing good things, climbing ladders, as it were. And the eternal perspective, yeah, it was there, but it was a little in the distance.
Anything you want to share as to why you moved to Crossmark?
Yeah, so a host of things. You know, looking now back at the decision, I'm as content as I've ever been in the business. I don't mean a lulling content. I mean motivated contentment. Showing up at work with people who have the same worldview as I do is the first time I can say that in 40 years. So I kind of feel my life is unified. It's all one, if I can put it that way. I've worked great places with great people, don't get me wrong, but the commonality of purpose, the commonality of calling. I was managing at Nuveen some money for some value/faith-based advisors, and I always enjoyed that piece of it. And so, you know, making the change, I only looked at values-based, faith-based managers, and thankfully had a choice of several, and for a bunch of reasons, picked Crossmark.
All right. So then how would you say you're trying to change the world? Just a small question.
I would say that changes over the course of a 40-year career. I guess what I'd say is, changing the world combines all I've done in the past, meaning I've tried to become excellent as an investment manager in large cap U.S. public equities, but simultaneously tried to grow my faith and my faith-based influence on things. But they were two semi-separate pieces. Boy, if I can combine those in a way to really make a difference for the kingdom. And that's where I find myself, Jeff. And so that's how I'm trying to change the world. Use my expertise and experience along with my belief set, if you will, to make a difference.
Is that been a hard transition coming from, however we say this, secular asset management to now kind of a values or faith-based? Has that been hard?
When I look in the mirror, I say, Jeff, what took me so long? So it hasn't been hard in that sense. You know, at Crossmark, like a lot of small firms, our goal is to grow. And I say to my wife, I don't know if we're going to grow or not. I think we will. But if we don't, at least I'm going to have fun doing it because of the people I'm with and the processes we're trying to institute.
This is not disparaging at all of the industry that you came from and frankly that I came from. But if you were to quantify a few examples of the differences that you see today versus 10 years ago in your career, what would be some practical examples of that?
Well, the first thing comes to mind, I hope this is an answer to your question, is at the peak at BlackRock, my little team, we managed $42 billion. Crossmark, the whole firm, we managed $6 billion.
Okay. Got
and
it.
I'm only a little piece of it. That's a perspective that's kind of interesting. Another one that's related to that, I'm at a firm that manages $6 billion. And to a lot of people, that's a lot of money. And it is. But BlackRock, the firm I used to work for, you know, is a lot of zeros behind that, but you know, well into the trillions of dollars under management. So those perspectives. And, you know, I even think about this through my career, Jeff, is the difference when I started managing a lot of small portfolios to bigger ones. It's just the same number of shares with a couple of zeros behind it. You do the same work with the same intensity. It's just a different order of magnitude. So in some sense, it's very different, but other senses, Jeff, it's very similar.
From an ego perspective, is that hard to go from all the zeros to less zeros?
It isn't. Earlier in my life, it definitely would have been. I'm no super saint. And so the ego would have been bruised, but you know, I've made the choice. I've been doing this a long time. Like I said, I'm probably in the fourth quarter of life. You know, this is a great place for me to practice my trade and try to make a difference for people.
All right, Bob, this is another wide open question, but I'm curious to hear how you're going to answer this. When did you realize the power of capital? and maybe what that means to you.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is I remember at Christmas time when I was a kid sitting around the table, my grandparents were there and we were celebrating that my father's salary had just crossed $10,000.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm.
You know, that's one power of capital comment. And another is, this goes way back, I delivered a daily newspaper for 6 years. We had 4th of July and Christmas off. But every other day, the paper published. And of course, I didn't make a lot of money there, but I could see how this thing was accumulating.
Mm.
Because my parents instructed me that I needed to save 80% of what I earned for college expenses. And I could see, you know, I started to see the value of compound interest mm-hmm. and all those good things. That's another power of capital. And then the whole money management business, if you can't appreciate the power of capital when you're managing a lot of money and what people can do with that money, that's pretty powerful.
Maybe on the opposite, and maybe it's not the opposite side of this, is what does stewardship mean to you?
That's a life issue, as you well know. A lot of people hear stewardship and they think money. Mm-hmm. It's not just money. It's everything. Again, with my Christian worldview, I believe that everything I have has been given to me by God. My body, my mind, as small as it is some days. Yes, the money and other resources I have. My relationships, my friendships, my family. A steward is somebody who takes care of something for somebody else. You know, mm-hmm. I say, if the money I have, Jeff, is really mine, who cares what I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's really God's, now all of a sudden, the responsibility and opportunity just grows meaningfully. So I think stewardship is absolutely key. I mean, if you go to and count, you look at your red letter edition of the New Testament, Jesus said more about money and possessions than he did about heaven and hell combined.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because he knew it was a heart issue. So stewardship is life.
Very well said. Very well said. How do you think traditional money management views stewardship differently than what you just described?
So I think most people's view of stewardship is a lot narrower than what I just described.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people confuse stewardship with generosity, and they're two very different things. Yeah, they have overlap in relationship. But I think for a lot of, can I say secular folks, stewardship is just taking my money and doing good things with it. And doing good things with it has overlap with those of us a Christian worldview, but not exactly the same. It's how do I do good things here on this planet? And, you know, again, I don't want to preach a sermon, but I'm reminded of what Jesus said. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth. And then he gives all the reasons why. But the next verse, but do store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And so maybe that's the difference in stewardship view between those of us with a Christian worldview and those not.
Yeah, and I'm going to go one step further. I've seen in the faith-based community, and I'm going to generalize here, that the generosity piece, the tithing, the giving, oftentimes that fulfills the stewardship bucket. What I'm called a common good is the corpus, the capital that you don't give away, saying, and we still need to be stewards of that. And one of the things I would say, and I'm sure you've seen this too, in the non-faith-based or secular side, there's some wonderful examples there where they do take their corpus and try to do good. So I think there's plenty of learnings, even for the faith-based community, from the secular, especially on the corpus side and the non-charity side.
I really agree with you, and you know this from your common good work, as you said. For years, my wife and I looked at income as stewardship and generosity. We woke up one day and said, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
The income becomes small relative to the wealth. There's where the stewardship really comes in. So we've learned over the years and made some progress, and we have a plan where Uncle Sam's not going to get one dime of whatever we leave, and our real hope is that our last check bounces. In other words, we're trying to give it away as fast as we earn it and give our wealth away too, so we can see the fruits of our labors and meet the needs that are huge around the world.
And what's interesting about that, I would argue, and again, being a little simplistic, I would argue that tithing, charity at times can be a discipline, whereas giving from your corpus or even investing from your corpus, meaning for the sake of others, actually requires faith, because it's your very stuff that you want for your retirement or whatnot. When you start saying, no, I'm actually going to think about it in the context of how it's impacting others. And that's a concept that I've been wrestling with for the last year of, it's easy to kind of say that charity is a discipline, but I feel like as we start, my wife and I have been investing with the mindset of others, you know, like I've got a deep passion for formerly incarcerated. I just wrote a check because I'm creating a fund in that. And on one level, I'm like, what am I doing? I could lose all this money. On the other hand, it's like, yeah, but this is what I'm called to do. And this is what I love to do. Doesn't necessarily make sense all the time mathematically. But to what you just said, when you view this as it's not our capital to begin with, so the risk looks totally different.
Totally agree. I'm reminded back to your income comment, back to the newspaper that I delivered. My parents, God bless them, forced me to save, as I said, 80%, give 10% to the church, and 10% I could buy a Coke for myself once in a while, you know? And that 10% that I gave away, it became a discipline. It was a habit. I don't know if there was any joy in it for me in the early years, but you know, discipline followed consistently can lead to the joy came in later. I probably wouldn't have developed it without that. So you're absolutely right. And then you bring the corpus behind it. It comes back to our definition of stewardship.
All right. So we're going to end this on an even broader question that I've asked so far. If you could make a dream come true for your life, what would that be?
You know, I'm going to give you a simplistic answer and then maybe I can fill in a couple of blanks. That the kingdom would advance a little more because I had the opportunity to walk on this planet. That I could make a difference somehow in the kingdom. You know, maybe it's the faith of a family member. Maybe it's professional influence to help others have a little more for whatever it is that they're doing with that money. And I got to layer on top of all that, maybe a little more joy and peace in the world, you know, personally with people I come in contact with. If I can contribute 2 cents to all those things, that's a dream come true.
All right. You just spurred one more question. You have 40 years of being in the business. What's changed from 40 years ago to today in the financial services industry?
Yeah, the business has changed a lot, Jeff, as you well know. I remember my days, particularly at the Oppenheimer Funds, is the most fun part of the business. It was small. It was growing like a weed. It was not very regulated because it wasn't that big. People left us alone. Now, it's a very different business. It's a big business. It's highly regulated. It's very fragmented. For those in the business, they know the buy side and the sell side, and the pendulum oscillates back and forth as to which has more power right now. It's the buy side. We'll see. But the business has changed. The business cycle hasn't changed. You know, we have booms and busts and therefore bull markets and bear markets, but the way we do our thing has radically been altered.
All right. So you mentioned, and then I am done. You mentioned joy and freedom, which is something that I've been wrestling with myself, and I won't go through all the ramifications of that. But as somebody who managed billions of dollars at one point, and hopefully you'll be back to those billions of dollars over time, how did you live with that stress or pressure and try to have joy and freedom in that?
Yeah. I, you know, God wires us all differently. He wired me. It never bothered me. Hmm. I mean, when I underperformed for a period of time that was a little too long, that bothered me. But the day-to-day of managing a lot of money, I guess I was wired for that and rose to the occasions where, and I always had good people around me. We had a good team to get the job done. But, you know, the dollar amounts, Jeff, really never stressed me out.
It's like my dad. If you saw him, my dad's 78, God made him to be a doctor. And it's very clear. So God probably made you exactly to do what you're doing, which is, because the average person probably doesn't live in that freedom like you can.
It's so true. And that's, you know, comes back to, I think about raising our kids. We always encourage them, find out the intersection of what you're good at mm-hmm. and what you love to do and where people have a need. If you can identify that, you get a lot of freedom and peace. Don't, you know, I remember somebody called me, they named two different jobs in the financial industry. And their question was not which one should I take, it's which one can I make more money in? Mm. And I said, I'll answer your question, but that's the wrong question.
Right.
It's, you know, how have you been wired? What are you good at? And what do you love to do? Go find that.
We really appreciate your insights and knowledge and your willingness to join us today. So thank you so much for speaking to us and for your time. Not to put you on the spot, is there anything you'd want to say to our listeners as we close, or did you nail everything you wanted to share?
I think I nailed most things, but I forgot to mention buy low and sell high.
You know what? I think I've heard that before.
But when you figure it out, call me.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. But then everybody goes, okay, so what should I buy? So we'll leave that for another episode.
There you go.
Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Till next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.